Okay, we're back on the air again. Welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Gillen, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, home of East SETI and the Self-Mastery Earth Institute, otherwise known as Paranormal and UFO Central. We have a great guest tonight, Brooks Agnew. Brooks, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Seems like we're having some major technical difficulty.
No, that's all right. You sound fine.
Oh, great. Everywhere. It just seems like the station, then now here. You know, somebody's playing phone tag with us or something. I don't know. But there's so many things I wanted to cover tonight. I know that you have a lot of... one of your specialties, I guess, is geology, for one thing. And there's so many areas we can go into. I wanted to get into the trip to the inner Earth and everything else going on. Do you know much about what's happening with the volcanoes? Have you been following that?
I haven't been following the volcano activity. I've been watching the earthquake activity in the Pacific Rim, going from San Francisco up around Alaska and down the other side to the Aleutian Islands, and it has been incredibly active.
Yeah, it's really picking up right now, and I think we're coming into a full moon. And was it full perigee? Or perigee? I can't remember which one it is.
Well, I know that... in the last 30 days, there have been 617 earthquakes over 4.0 on the Richter scale in that area alone.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to do a gentle slide, but it, you know, all the geologists seem to be putting out dire warnings, even the conservative ones. They're saying San Francisco's getting ready to just bust loose. And,
well, one of the other models that I've been keeping my eye on is the interface between the continental shelf and the deep western portion of the Pacific Ocean. If there is an undersea landslide, they're saying that it could create a tsunami between 1,300 and 1,800 feet high.
Wow. Now, is that the Cascadia fault line?
Yes, and they're saying that if that happened the way it has shown up to have happened in the past, although it was only a 380-foot tsunami, it travels at 600 miles an hour, so there would not be much warning time.
No. Yeah, it's the whole West Coast there is going to have an experience if that thing busts loose.
I can say is I'm glad I live in western Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm glad I live east of the Cascades. I got a big mountain range between me and the ocean.
Well, you might not have so far to drive to get to the beach.
Yeah, some people, I can just go down to the bottom of the hill here and jump into the inlet here and swim with the dolphins again. I won't have to fly to Hawaii. But there's another event. One of the things, I was just sent this list of volcanoes. They said 59 volcanoes were going off. And I just watched Al Gore's new movie, you know, An Inconvenient Truth. Have you seen that?
No, I'm not really much into propaganda. I try to get the data for myself.
Well, what I thought about it, it was the science behind it. And they showed a definite... correlation between the, you know, greenhouse gases and the, you know, global warming. And
well, that can't be denied. I mean, the greenhouse gases are accumulating and they are incubating the solar energy where it cannot escape. But there are sources of the greenhouse gases that dwarf, you know, man's activities.
Oh, yeah, with the tundra melting down and all the methane being released there and I guess it's they actually covered that. They covered that. Plus, from it's my understanding that we have a it's a whole heliosphere, or the solar system is moving to a new place in the universe where it's glowing at its leading edge, and that the planets are four times brighter than they have been. So, you know, this is a you know, at least it's happening throughout our entire solar system, and it might be happening throughout the entire universe.
That's correct. In fact, based on spectrographic analysis that we've done on stars. We can't see planets very well outside our solar system, but we can see stars. And based on that spectra, we are seeing global warming, not only for all the planets in our solar system, but also for stars that we can see from Earth.
Mm-hmm. So it is definitely a universal event.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about cosmology, what we can see with all of the instruments that we possess, and I mean X-ray, infrared, ultraviolet, visual, it only makes up about 6% of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
94% of the universe is what's considered dark matter and dark energy, and we have not figured out a way to directly measure that energy or that matter. What we can do is we can indirectly measure it. It's sort of like we don't know how much weight is in a bucket on the other side of a wall, but we can put a scale on the rope and lift the bucket, and indirectly we can tell how much weight's in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we do. We look at stars and we watch the way matter is pulling the stars around, and we can guess on the mass of the star, and we can guess on the mass that's tugging that star around. And you know, based on all the calculations that we have right now, if we just took the visual matter in the universe, there's a heck of a lot missing from the equation. So
yeah.
In order to round out the equation, we use this term dark matter and dark energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed on the visible light that we can see with our eyes, there's a lot of people that they use the old Newtonian science and the visible light to measure everything, and they think that's the end all. But I believe it's something like 1%.
It's just over 5%. That's about it.
Yeah, somewhere around there that we can measure. Right. I mean, even with our most sophisticated instruments, I guess we're up to what, 5 or 6%? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And there's another 95% out there that I believe the only way you can measure it is to get out of your body and start learning how to get out of your body and get into the other dimensions and experience it that way.
Well, I think you're probably right. And I don't know of any instrumentation that's as sensitive in other dimensions
mm-hmm.
as the human soul is.
Oh, yeah, they... You know, people go, hey, how come you don't have pictures of these fifth and sixth dimensional beings? Well, with the new digital cameras, we actually are getting photographs of these beings up here. And it's amazing. They look like shadows, but you can see a complete form of a person. You know, you can tell down to the clothes they're wearing and the outlines of their faces.
Really?
And, it's getting pretty amazing because the veils between worlds here at the ranch, because it is a vortex, are very thin, and we're actually filming not just the UFOs, but you know, in this field here, when we photograph the field, we actually get pictures of beings that are humanoid, but definitely not from Earth.
Well, I'm really interested in that, in the vortex concept. I had one of my readers wrote me today and asked me why, for our polar expedition project, why we had chosen the North Pole instead of the South Pole. And I really haven't had a chance to answer him, but it kind of set me to thinking, and I went back through my notes that I got from the expedition company and from Rodney Clough, who is leading the expedition. And it appears that the vortex energy at the North Pole is stronger than that at the South Pole. It may be an entry point as opposed to an exit point. I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in our books, we talk a lot about these different vortexes and crossing of ley lines and concentration points on the Earth. It's like, I'm going to use a term maybe that might be unfamiliar to you. You probably know a lot more about this than I do, but there's kind of an interface between dimensions. It seems like a conduit opens up there.
Yes. Now, the Tibetans talk a lot about this, and they say there's actually doorways between other worlds or other dimensions, and they know where they are in the Himalayas, and it's kind of common knowledge to move in between worlds through these doorways, and they usually correspond with the a cave, it seems like, some kind of a sacred cave, and they keep it pretty well guarded, the secret as to where these doorways are.
I've heard that exact same thing from another source. It's got to be true, but I don't know if they guard the cave or if you have to be, you know, going back to some of the religious texts, and this is not only in Christianity, but it's in other sects as well. Not every human can simply just walk through a portal from our world into another world. There is a physiological change that has to happen to the person doing the traveling, and it's a matter of taking your physical body and taking it to another vibrational level so that it can, and I'll use a quote, so that it can withstand the glory of going to the next level. All of the prophets and all of the apostles that were shown higher realms or taken on time-traveling trips by various angelic beings in the scriptures all underwent a process called transfiguration. And from what I can understand of just literally reading the texts, it is a temporary changing of the body so that it can withstand the glory of these other realms. When that person is returned to this world, they are literally exhausted. And then they collapse for up to 3 days.
Yeah. You know, that makes sense, because I took a friend of mine up on the mountain here, and there's a special place on the reservation that they allowed me to go up to, and so it's like a big dish, you might say, but it's natural. It looks like a big bowl. And I've seen energy moving from this bowl up into the sky before, like a transmission or something. It was kind of interesting from here. And so we went up to that bowl, and when we got into that energy field, the crown, the top of my head, was just buzzing. And I felt energy just moving all through my body. It was incredible. And I took a friend up there with me, and he slept for 3 days straight. We were trying to find him. We were wondering if he was okay and everything, and you know, we didn't hear from him for 3 days, and finally we went over and had the guy open up his house, you know, that he was renting from, and to check on him, and he was sleeping. And we woke him up, and he was just dead asleep for 3 days in a row after that experience.
Yeah. Oh, I can just imagine that. Last summer, my co-author and I went to England, and we made the trip to Stonehenge. It wasn't, you know, during the solstice or anything, but it was at least quiet. We got there before all the tour buses, so all the photographs I took had no people in them. And I really expected to feel something. I'm not a particularly sensitive person to that kind of energy like you are, but I really, you know, given the fame and the hype of that area, really expected to feel something. And I tried to leave my mind open to it, but honestly, I didn't feel anything, which is just a testament to my spiritual numbness. But nevertheless, it was a fascinating experience.
Well, it might be activated at certain times as well.
Now, that's true. It may be something that just doesn't run 24 hours a day. You have to get there at a certain alignment for it to really energize.
Yeah, I went and meditated on the exact time to go up there, and we both went up there doing our own personal vision quest, and it was a pretty amazing experience. We had a lot of other events happen there. I actually filmed we saw a ship up in the air, and I tried to film the ship with my camera. And when I pointed my camera at the ship, the video camera, it would not work. It would just turn off. And when I turned it back on and aimed it in the other direction, it was fine. It worked perfectly. When I turned it back on and aimed it up at the ship, it would just turn off. And both of us saw it, and there was no way it was going to allow us to film.
That couldn't make a record of it.
No. And so we didn't even talk about it after we went back. Well, we said nobody's going to believe us because we didn't get the film. You know, so it's pretty amazing the control some of these ships have. We have another guy that did that on the other side of the mountain, filming him. And whenever he zoomed in on the ship, they would back his camera off. automatically. He would try to zoom in, all of a sudden they would just back it right off.
Mm.
And they just took over control of his camera, and they wouldn't let him zoom in on the ship, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Sounds like what's been happening to my studio equipment lately. I've had a guest on my program twice, and both times the entire show disappeared. It was like somebody went into my computer and deleted it. And this last time I had him on, I actually had two remote backups, one in Paradise, California, there at your network, and the other in Dallas, Texas, and both of those failed.
I'm starting to wonder what's going on here, if it isn't some kind of sabotage by, you know, you might say lesser beings, or who knows, or somebody else playing with us. But it's definitely my whole system. As we know, we tried to do the show. All we got was an echo, and it was terrible. And the home broadcast unit I have here, the same thing is happening with it. I went to do another show, News for the Soul. I was on their show, and my equipment works perfect every time, and I turned it on, and sure enough, they couldn't access that line, the same line. So somebody's playing with this one line I have.
Mm.
It seems right.
Well, listen, I have a question for you, because as I've been making preparations to make this expedition to the North Pole the summer of 2007, it's quite expensive, and the equipment that I've got to build is time-consuming to build, and I don't want to rush doing it, and I want to have plenty of test time. But I've had not a few pieces of email, and of course the concerns of my wife, that there are surface-dwelling forces that don't want us to make this journey, and I have not been keeping it a secret. I've published it in the book, and I've talked about it on the air, and actively trying to raise donation money, you know, to help cover the expenses of going, which I hope to recoup with the sale of the book from that. But I actually had a person in, I think, Houston, Texas, wrote me, and I don't want to give her name, but she said, you know, they're not going to let you come back alive with that information, which has my wife greatly concerned. And I knew that you're sensitive, at least to the sentinels that watched that opening, and wondered if you had any feelings about it.
Yeah, I know that you know, there are some pretty negative powers that be that pretty much, you know, put the hammer down on Admiral Byrd and bringing that information out.
But at least they let him go in and return.
Yeah. I know there's other higher forces that can watch over things that are the ones that are in real control, you might say. You know, so, you know, it would be interesting. It's kind of a push-pull thing going on right now. There's the energies are kind of split. Even in the negative factions that would be blocking a lot of the things that we're doing, seems like half of them now want this information to come out, or even more than half.
Yeah, that's what I get, too, that not only are they going to let us in, but they plan on providing us a lot of data and even samples to bring back to the surface. They really want us, this expedition, I guess it's been prophesied in their land that this is going to happen.
Yeah, I've heard prophecies even before I even knew about your trip that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so by other people as well that you know, that these gates would open up and that there would be people going into the interior and reunion happening with, you know, we have a lot of our ancestors are actually in there, as well as several other beings, you know, different races. So it's, you know, I would... You know, I've talked to so many people about that expedition. They go, oh, I want to go. As soon as I told them about it, they go, I want to go. And so I sent them over to your website to get the particulars on it. But, you know, I think it's a matter of timing. And I think by the time you're ready to go, that some of these other powers that be are going to pretty much have folded in on themselves to the point where they're not really that operational anymore.
That actually came out in one of our planning meetings that opposition forces, at least government-sponsored ones, are going to be too tied up doing other things to worry about a little boat.
Yeah. Well, they're going to have their hands full because some of the beings I talked to, they said that what's going to happen is the unknown is going to be made known, which is their greatest fear. And all their shenanigans and everything they've done in the past is all going to come to light, to the surface, and they're going to be putting out so many fires and have so much attention on them for those issues. I don't think they're going to have time to deal with the boat. And, you know, as far as the UFO thing, and it's all tied in together, the disclosure very soon is going to be coming in from the ETs. You know, I hate to burst the bubble on a lot of disclosure projects. They're important that they're doing their thing, but the real disclosure is going to come from the skies, and it's not very far away.
Well, that was the other thing that I'm concerned about. I'm concerned, but I'm anxious about it. I've never seen a UFO. Mm-hmm. I admit I've never seen. I've always wanted to, but I've got this incredible feeling right now that we as a planet are on the verge of global first contact.
Oh, we are. It is so close. It's unbelievable. They're not giving me any exact times or dates, but, you know, they're saying definitely within the next 2 years, and it's probably going to come even faster than that. It might even be months away.
Well, I I don't know what to make of that. I want to be there. I want to see it happen. I want to be part of it. It's hard for me to fathom it. I'm so...
With the Boeing engineers coming up here, that is pretty hard to refute. You know, when you've got 25 Boeing engineers and top aerospace project managers, you know, coming up and seeing the ships and saying, I don't know what to make of this. This is nothing we're making, not even mm-hmm. our skunk works. And we don't know what these are or who they are. And you know, these things are going, you know, several hundred thousand miles an hour, making right-angle turns, lighting up the entire sky and responding to the people on the ground. And so, you know, they come right on cue. They give us a time, and they show up right on cue, and we have the cameras rolling. So, you know, it's hard to, I don't know how you can refute that, basically, because, you know, the cameras don't have an imagination, and the witnesses back up the cameras. And I think it's more important for everybody to have their own experience here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can talk to your blue in the face and show as much footage as you want, but until somebody's standing there and they see those ships power up in front of them, that alters you.
Well, I have to admit, I've looked at a lot of photographs. I've talked to a lot of witnesses. But I'm a scientist at heart, and I'm data driven. It's not that I'm a non-believer. It doesn't really have anything to do with belief. It's just, to me, science, I guess, is as much a religion is anymore. But
yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I'm looking forward to coming away changed as well.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to the seminar period. In the middle of August that you're hosting up there.
Oh, yeah. We've got an incredible lineup for that the seminar. Actually, I've got the lineup right here. We're going to have a mystery guest, and we're going to have a few. We're having, Michael Ledwith on What the Bleep?
No.
He was the father on What the Bleep. He was an advisor to the Pope. And, it's amazing. And he just totally went into the depth of knowledge of religion and then found out everything kind of aimed at UFOs and interdimensional realities and correspondence. And has an amazing presentation. But we have David Sarita, you know, who did the Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs video.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be there. Neil Freer, Breaking the God Spell, and Sapiens Rising. Wendell Stevens, and we have you, Brooke Dagney, running it there. Alfred LeBray with Exopolitics. Dr. Nick Bajic, Earth Rising, is going to be there. Michael Sala, Angela Whitecliff are going to be there.
Yeah, Michael and I spoke on the phone. You were down. You were in Hawaii at the time going to the speaking at the ET World Conference, World Peace Conference.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I had several of their guests on my program, and Michael and I spoke for probably 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got quite a group. There's Sonia Kalchar, which is she's like a medical intuitive, and talked a lot about the divine feminine energy. Mike Schultz, Steve Marino, he's one of our lead investigators here. And we're going to do some exclusives here. We have an exclusive premiere of Bird's Eye View, which is a wonderful movie that's going to be coming out. And then Robert Nicole is going to show the Crop Circle movie.
Ah.
We're going to have music and fire dancing and you name it. So it's going to be quite an event. And then afterwards, we do a Sky Watch, and everybody will be able to come out and see what's happening for themselves.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, and usually when you have a group this big focused on this much, focusing on the awakening healing process, you're going to have a lot of activity in the sky. We'll probably have a lot of military activity here. our own little air show, which is funny. They come to these events. It's funny. We have constant surveillance, but the ships just power up and come in and light up and turn and then before the F-15s or whatever can get on them, they just disappear.
Wow.
Or leave them in the dust, you know. So.
Well, that's going to make a great picnic activity, to be sure.
Uh-huh. But what's nice, we get enough people out there with camcorders, you're going to see a lot of people walking away with some pretty incredible footage.
Now, these beings that are inhabiting these craft,
mm-hmm.
these are obviously higher order beings. These are not the drone, that little gray drone send here.
No, these are more the Nordics. They're very spiritually and technologically advanced beings, and the majority of them are here to assist in the awakening and healing process, and they're using their technologies. Kind of a spiritual form of technology to assist us in, releasing a lot of these denser frequencies that are both psychometrizing the Earth and kind of the negative grid around the planet. They're just tearing it down and opening things up for people to awaken to their true self, which is, a multidimensional being.
Mm.
But a lot of people are just popping like crazy. They're opening up and awakening and realizing that, they came to do something else other than what they're doing. I received an email. It was pretty interesting. And the title is Tibetan Monks Remote View ETs. And I don't know if you got that email, but they said that the ETs actually intervened before 2012 and stopped. Stop the Earth from destroying itself from the Earth humans. And when they did the remote viewing, they said that there was a huge intervention, and they would not allow, Armageddon or the nuclear exchange to occur, or any of these other things. So,
I know of several well documented interventions between. By these off-world craft and/or beings. With several government military operations, namely the launch or the testing of launch sequences for nuclear missiles.
Yes, uh-huh.
I was in the Air Force, and I worked around Missile Command, even though I was in a SAC unit, and had a lot of interaction with the silos in the Midwest and the northern part near the border. I can't disclose where they are still to this day, but I can tell you that anything, whether it's ice on the rails of the doors or a speeding vehicle or a small aircraft or even an ultralight or even a unauthorized vehicle driving too closely to these areas, people have to answer for that. They are guarded, and they have to be up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without a single second of downtime. Mm-hmm. And to have, and from what I understand from Robert Salas, who told this to me personally, there were numerous rockets, numerous missile silos that went offline, and their memories were erased. And these are systems that have backups and then backups to the backups. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like an EEPROM, not a hard drive. Not supposed to be able to erase those things. But these off-world craft came into the airspace, neutralized these missiles at will, numerous times over quite a long period of time. And I can tell you right now that the U.S. government considers that a clear and present danger.
Yeah, my understanding is that the UFOs take a higher classification as far as, under the secrecy or whatever you want to call it. They're even higher than nuclear arms or, as far as top secret, clearance and things like that. It's on a very, very need-to-know basis, and even presidents can't even find out what's going on.
Well, I am one of the news media, wasn't the White House press corps, but someone that was present in there, managed to get a question in to Vice President Cheney and asked him if Bush had been briefed on the UFO question. Mm-hmm. And in literally, classic seasoned diplomat style, Dick Cheney just simply said, he's been briefed.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Volunteered nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a word more, huh?
No, and the other thing that kind of worries me is it's not so much the United States as generally, at least in this country, we consider ourselves a force for peace.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's an oxymoron, but believe me, you've got to be the big brother on the block, or there's some bad men in the world that will take advantage of the weaker ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a rogue leader who's literally, I think he's insane. I don't know if even he's healthy mentally. He may be mentally ill, but in any case, he has his fingers on multiple buttons, and he's been pushing them lately. He's been launching missiles out into airspace, literally daring someone to shoot them down. And I think we're postured. We've got an Aegis system in the Sea of Japan, which is fully capable of knocking down these missiles that the North Korean president is launching.
Mm-hmm.
And they were debating today whether they should knock the missiles down as a sign to rogue nations, don't try this because we can knock your tin cans out of the air at will. On the other hand, there's a lot of forces for diplomacy to try to, come up with a political solution, although it's, I think, impossible to come to an agreement with an insane person.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will just simply not put any value on an agreement that they make with anyone, because they'll rationalize, that you're subhuman anyway, so why should I make an agreement with you? I'll make an agreement just to buy myself a few more weeks or a few more months to allow me to win this this arms race, but that's generally where they are. Now, I think it would just be phenomenally jaw-dropping if a UFO managed to show up over North Korean airspace and evaporated one of these missiles right out of the sky before the Aegis system ever had a chance to demonstrate itself, and in full view of CNN and all the other news media, where they just kind of look away from the eyepieces of their camera and say, what the heck just happened?
They actually did that, and not with North Korea, but they did it on our... We launched some missiles in their test flights, and with a warhead supposedly on the front, it's probably a dummy or something, the exact same weight as a warhead. Who knows, you know, what we shot up on the end of that missile. But he actually showed, Dr. Solis actually showed clips, and I think it was him. I know I saw him on another film, the movie Out of the Blue. I believe it's on that movie as well. But they actually shot down quite a few of our launches. And in the footage, when they were monitoring these launches, these ships just appeared and shot out three or four bursts, you know, maneuvered all around this rocket as it was going, and just pretty much disintegrated it, blew it into a billion pieces, and moved on. And so they've made it very clear that, look, you know, whatever you send up, we can take out, you know, in a second. It's not a problem for us. So,
well, as I said, the classification that these kinds of craft are clear and present danger is there, and I don't have first-hand knowledge of this, but I have spoken to first-hand people who weren't there but got the knowledge first-hand that we have shot at and knocked out of the sky their craft, and they have done the same to our craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been back engineering some toys and taking them out. There's a lot of that going on is what I call low-level contact. And that would be with the little grays and the EBs, you know, and that kind of nonsense. But when you get up into these other beings, there's really nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, I think it would be immensely more intelligent to offer them milk and cookies instead of 50-caliber rounds.
Well, exactly. That's what I was telling people. I said, you know, at the last talk in Hawaii, I said, you know, you've got these craft that are coming here that are interdimensional, and some are interstellar, interdimensional. Some are probably a million to a billion years ahead of us in evolution, both spiritual and technological. And we're firing on these ships. And to me, when you fire everything you have at a ship and nothing happens, then maybe it's time to rethink your program. And I said, in the interest of national security, we should be really making peace with these guys and welcoming them and asking them to assist us in ending war, you know, and cleaning up our environment, bringing these technologies to aid, you know, in the awakening healing process. And that would be in the true interest of national security. Sending F-15s up to greet them, trying to shoot these things down, and, you know, greeting them with aggression is probably the most insane thing we can do right now.
I would like to see some high-level dialogue open up, because obviously we are not in control of what's happening on our planet.
No.
But it's clear from the evidence, you know, propaganda or not, that we are reaching a point of criticality with respect to ocean temperatures, that once they reach a certain point, and I'm talking about deep ocean temperatures.
Oh, yeah.
When you apply pressure and low temperatures, it's quite easy to take methane into a frozen state. Now, in the deep parts of our ocean, near the bottom, are, you know, literally billions of tons of frozen methane, which, you know, populates most of the planets in our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
When it's kept away from the surface like that, it makes the atmosphere breathable and habitable to almost any kind of life form. But once the ocean reaches that critical temperature where that methane becomes liquefied again and begins to dissolve into the seawater, it will make its way to the surface, and then we will be at a point of no return for greenhouse gases. We won't be able to stop it. The Earth, the albedo of the Earth, will continue to drop, which means that the Earth is absorbing more energy instead of reflecting energy.
Mm-hmm.
Back out into space, and as it absorbs more energy, then you have a self-perpetuating cycle. You cannot reflect more energy than you're absorbing, and the planet will continue to heat up, and then the atmosphere will change severely.
You know, it's happening in the Arctic right now with the tundra melting. That's throwing off all this frozen plant matter and everything that's now turned into methane and
right.
it's actually rotting.
It's
exactly.
a byproduct given off by bacteria.
And that's jumping up the greenhouse gases as well.
Well, a couple of tens of millions of heads of cattle are doing the same thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
pigs, domesticated animals of all kinds, put off a lot of methane that
goes
into the atmosphere unabated.
And we have to start putting that Beano, you know, in the cattle feed.
Yeah, Beano in the cattle feed. No, if we figured out a way to increase the Earth's albedo, though, and if we had, for instance, some regional snowfall enough to last for a couple of months on the ground where it would actually reflect back out into space some heat, or if we had what's in chemistry we call aerosols. Aerosols are particulate matter that's blown up into the atmosphere. Usually this happens by volcanoes. It's
mm-hmm.
it's been tracked. Mount St. Helens did it. Pinatubo did it. Krakatoa did it. Once you blow these aerosols up into the upper atmosphere, they absorb or even reflect the sun's light. It doesn't reach the ground, and so you don't have an infrared transfer of energy, and the temperature of the planet actually goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Because the albedo of the planet has
gone up. Yeah, I always figured that was a built-in system, because when the planet starts overheating like it is, eventually you're going to have more earthquakes and volcanoes that are going to be releasing these gases, especially the volcanoes.
Or believe it or not, there's one more that humans actually do have an effect on,
mm-hmm.
and that is forest fires.
Oh,
yeah. Forest fires are a natural earth cooling system. There's more standing timber in the United States now than there was when Columbus landed here, because we put the forest fires out.
Yeah.
And it has gotten to the point now where it's almost impossible to prevent a forest fire. When there's a lightning strike or a stray spark of some kind,
mm-hmm.
and or spontaneous combustion due to compost piles,
yeah.
these forests go up like cracker boxes because they're so dense and they have not been cleared by fire in, gosh, over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So man has an effect on global warming in that we're not letting the forests burn the way they would have in the past. If we would let them burn, then the aerosols would go up in the atmosphere and the Earth would cool again, which would create more rain cycles.
Yeah, it definitely seems like between the fires and the volcanoes and everything, there is a system that, if left alone, would probably take care of this. You know, it's like a
check-and-balance
system that nature has.
The other that's more cataclysmic is our superstorms, which we've had a couple of popular movies out, and Art Bell and Mr. Strieber's book on that actually tell the story accurately, the way a superstorm would happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually in 1999 we came really, really close to a superstorm. We had about 3/4 of the atmospheric formation needed to form a superstorm. It didn't quite function. It was a little wrong time of year, and it was only 3/4 of the rotation. But it came very close. I did some modeling on it, some math modeling on it, and it came very close to being a regional storm of that kind of magnitude.
Well,
now,
great.
When you dump 8 to 10 meters of snow on the ground, it takes months for that to melt.
Mm-hmm.
And it reflects a lot of energy back out into space.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention, I don't know what 27 feet of snow would do to downtown New York, but I doubt they would dig out of it very soon.
No, it'd take quite a while. Yeah, there's so many things getting... I don't think anybody knows unless you can go into the future and take a look at things as to what's going to happen, and there's so many hole cards in there. You know, a lot of I think right now we could use all the divine or ET intervention we can get, you know, to turn this thing around. Because we're not doing so good a job right now on how we're, you know, taking care of this planet. You might
say. Well, there's a lot of great remote viewing going on right now about that. And we'll reveal more of that as time goes on. I know you're about out of time. But I do want to caution all listeners. Don't be manipulated by these political parties that are simply using your fear of a global catastrophe to manipulate your money, your voting, your attitudes, your prejudices and hatreds. Do not be manipulated by that. You know, use your common sense. SUVs are not ruining the planet.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking of, you know, some of the, going back to the SUVs, the we have other technologies right now that would definitely, you know, change the...
Fossil fuel usage? Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I've been trying to get my old alum, Roger Billings, on the program for about 4 months now, and I know he's a super busy guy, but he wasn't... You know, he ran a fleet of city buses in the city where we went to college on tap water.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, while we were in college in 1976, I said, you know, Roger's going to change the world. I mean, we're going to be energy independent in 5 years. Well, here it's been, you know, 30 years.
I know.
And we haven't seen it. And frankly, you know, Roger has said many times, the world's not ready. It's not ready for this technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get him on the program. I know he doesn't want to come on the radio. He doesn't do interviews, but if he'll come on for anybody, he'll come on for me.
Yeah, there's other technologies I've seen actually held in my hand that put out enormous output, you know, zero-point energy technologies. And this game they're playing, oh, we're trying to get prove zero-point works and get it a little bit over unity. These things are so far over unity. They have so much energy coming out, and they don't know what to do with it. They have more trouble bleeding it off and using it, you know, elsewhere. But, you know, these same people that actually have these devices, the real people out there that have them are sitting on them, and they've had to be quiet about it. And, you know, a lot of them have had their labs burned down and families threatened and things of that.
Sure, lawsuits assets frozen. I know a lot of those stories. And doggone it, they're true. You've got a macroeconomic force that... moves literally trillions of dollars around the planet, keeps all kinds of bad guys at bay because we control their energy input. And once you release energy sources like this into their hands, the ability to affect the planet and attack their neighbors using that energy is unchecked.
Yeah, we've definitely got to do something this civilization has the potential to just live such an incredible life, and we have the technology to pretty much end disease. And if we took the trillions of dollars we're spending on these wars and keeping the war industry going and put it into our own infrastructure and brought these new technologies out, you know, people wouldn't be enslaved through dependence anymore. They could actually have that downtime, that quiet time to be creative.
I agree with you a lot. But if we could handle these three or four bad guys that you know, want to destroy the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd be more than happy to call everybody home and say, let's have no more war.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid if we just decided, you know, if we fell to the political forces that are saying the United States is responsible for all war in the world, if we rolled over to those kinds of forces and literally just dissolved our armed forces and brought everybody home, and I've actually heard that said on the Hill by several congressmen.
Mm-hmm.
If we did that, these tyrants would overrun their neighbors' borders within a week, and literally hundreds of millions of people, maybe even billions of people, would lose their lives.
What do you think about, you know, my feeling is with these upcoming earth changes, we're going to need everybody. We're going to need a lot of people home and all the equipment we can muster to, you know, to deal with these Katrinas and these other things that are very imminent, you might say, if you look at the models as far as what, you know, with the warming oceans and everything else. I don't think we've seen anything so far, you know, considering what is possible or yet to come.
Oh, I agree with you. And,
yeah,
you know, somebody asked me the other day, how could 30% of the population be wiped out in a weekend? And I said, gosh, you know, you realize that 90% of the population of just the United States lives within 20 miles of a coast.
Exactly.
All it would take is an oceanic catastrophe hitting two or three or four coasts on this planet, and we would lose about a third of our population in a weekend.
Yeah, it, the potential's there.
Sure it is. I'm not saying move away from the coast, but,
yeah.
You know, I'm not living on the beach. If I go to the beach, it's going to be for short periods of time.
Even when I went to Hawaii for this conference, I did a long meditation on it, you know. And that was the time when that supposed meteor was supposed to come in and hit.
Mm-hmm.
And wipe out everybody on the East Coast and you name it, you know. But anyway, I did a long meditation on that, and I got a real clear message that anything coming in, they'd pulverize, and they pretty much did. So they've been talking these meteors.
Cosmologically, the big stuff falls apart because of the Roche limit, which is where Earth's gravity literally just rips apart any body coming in through tidal gravity.
Uh-huh.
The small stuff burns up and shatters in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's the stuff about two or three times the size of a city bus that would really cause the problems, but that meteorites that size, even a kilometer across, would not end life as we know it on Earth.
Well,
it'd make a heck
like
of a boom, and it would probably cool off the planet a couple degrees, but it wouldn't end life as we know it.
Well, they'd have to, like, move a whole lot of ships out of the way to let it in. There's so many ships out there right now, they're jockeying for parking space, so
well,
I don't think it's a problem. Anything coming in, I'm sure they can handle it.
I think we're more... As cataclysmically speaking, we're more in danger of a close pass by a large gravitational body or a very powerful gravitational wave coming through our space.
Yeah.
That could have the effect on continents, on slowing the rotation of the Earth, on changing the polarity of the Earth from north to south, changing the tilt of the Earth relative to the sun. These are the kinds of things that would have global and catastrophic effects on the Earth.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, there's so many events that could happen out there. And what's even incredible and beyond most people's imagination is that there are ships that could handle that, you know, parked out in the universe there, that could actually expand their shields out and even cover the entire Earth, and they've been blocking massive solar flares that have been headed towards the Earth in these kill shots that a lot of the remote viewers were seeing. And these ships actually, NASA has photographs of them. I actually grabbed the photographs of these ships parked between us and the sun, and they expanded their fields out and blocked these incredible coronal mass ejections.
Wow.
So, And NASA doesn't want to talk about it, and as soon as you do talk about it, you go back to that photograph, and it's gone. And they're direct feeds off of SOHO. So, you know, and it has the NASA, the number on it, everything, you know, the photograph. But the same photographs we have, we went back to check and see if they're there, and they're taken off the site. You can't even get into the archives for these photographs.
Mm. Well, it's time to grab those off and stick them on your own hard drive. Most of the time I go there when there's, like, space weather shows that the wind's getting up high or there's a coronal hole. Right now, the sunspot 898 is still facing us, and it's huge and very well organized. It's a great one to study, I'll tell you, but it's not putting off much in the form of solar flares. But the solar wind, when it gets up to about 1,000 kilometers a second, we react in the form of an aurora borealis, but we get up in the neighborhood of X-class solar flares, X7, X9, and it gets dangerous to fly.
Oh, exactly. You get X-rayed in the planes. It looks like we're coming up to the end of our hour here, and again, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure, and you know, don't let the technical problems sweat you.
It's always wonderful to talk to you. I could talk to you for hours, but we're out of time. So, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is James Gilling with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off, and have a great evening.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.